Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shalom. We're going to jump right in today because we're continuing through our book, Stealing from God, Why Atheists Need God to Make Their Case. We've gone through causality, reason, information, and intentionality. So today we're going to talk about morality. Now, last week we covered two of these sections. We covered reason and information and intentionality. We're just going to cover morality today. We're just going to cover the one, and kind of two reasons for that. First, it's a big subject. Second, I also want to make sure that, I mean, if I tried to do two of these again, we wouldn't have much time for discussion. So I want to make sure we have discussion time for this morality subject. So let's dig in. Chapter 4, Turek titles this chapter Stealing Rights. Uses rights. He says stealing rights from God. Where do the rights that atheists, materialistic people, they cite these rights and then in some of their arguments, well, I have the right to this, I have the right to that, and they cite these rights. Where do they come from? Can they exist? Can those rights that those atheistic, materialistic view, where can they exist within their worldview? Because he says this in the chapter heading, I don't need to read it that small, but it says, you can know what a book says while denying there's an author. Think about that. You can know what a book says, denying that there's an author. But there would be no book to know unless there was an author. Likewise, atheists can know objective morality while denying God exists, but there would be no objective morality unless God exists. Now, before we jump into this and we kind of extrapolate on that, I want everybody to understand what objective morality is. What are we talking about? Well, we know that morals, we understand that morality, we understand that as a standard of behavior. That's your morals. But what do we mean when we say objective morality? See, objective is the opposite of subjective. So subjective, according to the Google and the interwebs here, subjective is based on or influenced by personal feelings, tastes, or opinions. Whereas objective is not influenced by personal feelings or opinions in or when considering and representing facts. Okay? So when we talk about objective morality, what we are saying is that the behavior being considered as moral is independent of the opinion or feelings of the person. Another way to put it would be to say what is right and wrong is right and wrong independent of whether or not the person believes it to be right and wrong or not. Okay? So the opposite of objective morality is subjective morality. And this is when people decide for themselves what is right and wrong, because it's subject to their feelings, their opinions. And it's why within a subjective morality viewpoint, a person can say, and we hear that in our society right now, what is right for me maybe is not right for you, or what is wrong for you is not wrong for me, blah, blah, blah. Because subjective morality does not depend upon an outside objective standard. It is based on the tastes, opinions, and feelings of the person that is talking about it. So would you not agree then that this subjective morality sounds very suspiciously like the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Right? What is the tree of knowledge of good and evil? It's you taking on for yourself what is right and wrong. We had two trees. We had, okay, here's this tree over here that says, here's my standard. Here's the tree of life. Live according to it and have life. Or you can decide for yourself, and good luck with that. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about what decides the morality, what decides good and evil. Okay? And taking of that tree then allowed mankind, or mankind decided to take that on itself. And so what are the consequences then of subjective morality? Death. See, objective morality, the Creator's morality, exists whether you believe it to exist or not. And we know we must conform to it in order to have life. And so all of that, I kind of get ahead of myself. So if morality, right and wrong, if that morality is objective, then it means that the behavior is right or wrong regardless of whether or not the person believes it to be right and wrong. That's objective morality. That's what we're talking about today. And so that's what he's referring to when he says you can know a book, what a book says, without saying there's an author, without, you know, denying the author. But there would be no book unless there was an author, and that's the same that he's saying. You atheists know, they may not admit it, but they even cite things that come from objective morality. The rights. I have a right to this. I have a right to that. I have a right to life. I have a right. Right? Okay. So they know objective morality. They don't call it that, because to call it that, they'd have to acknowledge the source of it. So they know objective morality and deny that God exists. But there would be no objective morality unless God exists, and that's his point. And so that's what Turek does in this chapter, is to make the case that not only does objective morality exist, but that atheists steal that morality from God in order to make their arguments about morality and about what is right and wrong. Now, he started this chapter by telling a long story. It's the story, and I'm not going to tell the whole story. You may or may not know it. How many people know the story behind Megan's Law? Does everybody know what Megan's Law is? Megan's Law. Okay. All right. Megan's Law. There was, maybe I will tell a shortened version of this story. There was a couple. They had this little daughter. Her name was Megan. She was 7 years old. This is a true story. She had a really good friend of hers that lived like right across the street, kind of catty corner. They sent her daughter out to go visit her friend. On the way walking across the street, she was abducted. She was raped at 7 years old and murdered. As they went through this whole thing, it was all over the national news. I mean, it's long enough, maybe you guys didn't know about it. But, you know, everybody came out and searched for her and all this stuff. What finally came out, the people that lived right across the street were three men, all three of them felonious sex offenders. One of them had raped and killed another 7-year-old girl 13 years before, served some time and was released. And he's the one that lured her as she was walking across the street to come pet his new puppy, and he raped and murdered her right across the street. Megan's Law is what was put in place and pushed forward by Megan's parents to make it the law that as convicted sex offenders are released back into the community, they have to register. That whole thing, you guys know, you have the registered sex offender. That is Megan's Law. Okay? That's Megan's Law. All right. So, in other words, if Megan's parents had known there were three sex offenders across the street, they may have walked their daughter across there, right? Okay. So, and maybe Megan would still be alive today. So, anyway, he told this story as he told this story, and actually he told it in a way that said, assume or that you have a daughter, and he told it in a very personal way. And the reason that he told that is because he wanted to get to a point about injustice. Now, the guy that killed, his name was Jesse Timmerman or something like that. The guy that did, they found him and he was sentenced to death. He got the death penalty. So they got justice for Megan in that sense. But 35%, it's only 35% of the child molestation and murder cases are solved in this country. Only 35%. So if you can imagine being one of those parents of all of those others that never get justice for those crimes. And that is how he led into this, to get you in that place where there's something so incredibly unjust about that. You know, you put that in your mind of what was done to a 7-year-old little precious innocent child. An atheist will tell you that that's wrong, and they would be correct. It is wrong on any level, okay? But he made this point, and I want you to think about this. You see, if there was no God, if there is not an objective standard, then no justice will ever be done for all of those other families. Thousands of pedophiles who have committed murder over the years will never get justice. And here's how cold it becomes. When the famous atheist Richard Dawkins was presented with this, his response was, well, that's just too bad. He said, just because we wish there was ultimate justice doesn't mean there is. And in his book, River Out of Eden, Dawkins wrote this. He said, in a universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt and others are going to get lucky, and you won't find any rhyme or reason to it, nor any justice. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we should expect if there is at the bottom no design, no purpose, no evil, and no good. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. DNA neither knows nor cares. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. So atheists admit, in their worldview, there is no ultimate justice. But now here's the point, and I want you to think about this, because this is the point. You see, in their worldview, they say there is no ultimate justice. Well, guys, if there is no justice, then there is no injustice, is there? Put another way, something can't be not right unless there is a standard of right. See, without objective morality, then it's just subjective to the person. If God doesn't exist and we're just fleshly robots responding to evolved electrochemical stimulations, then all morality is just subject to individual opinion. What that means is, in that worldview, rape and murder of little Megan was not wrong, because it was subjective to the person that did it, and it was right. Might be wrong for you, but it was right for the pedophile, because his subjective morality made it okay. It's just wrong for you. An atheist, see, has no standing to call anything right or wrong. The rape and child, rape and murder of a child is subject to the taste, the feelings, and the opinions of the person doing it. That decision has no more significance than saying, than making a decision whether a striped shirt goes with camouflage pants. It's opinion and preference, thinking about last week. Right, it's subjective. Sorry about that. Hey, I'm just saying, I would have been massacred if I'd have done that. You know, but he can get away with it. I don't understand. It's subjective. See, that's subjective morality. Where does that come from? Anyway, Turek wrote, and he's right, that an atheist has to suppress the most basic moral intuitions. Can you imagine this? What he said here? That surely that does not create a stable moral world. You guys wonder why I don't hardly ever inject any sort of humor in my messages, because the instant I do, I lose everybody in the room. All right. An atheist has to suppress these the basic morality that God put in us, okay? Including even that rape and murder is wrong. Hey, you know, it's just there's no rhyme or reason to it. There's no justice or injustice. Because without an objective moral standard, it's just decisions. See, in a universe that Dawkins describes where everybody just dances to the music of the DNA, where is there any grounds to condemn anything? Now, all these atheists will say that these things are wrong, not saying that they don't have morality. What I'm saying, and what Turek is saying, is that they have nothing, their worldview has nothing in which to base that morality. And so they have to steal it from God, and they don't realize they're doing it. How easy is it to see that civilization could not even exist if it literally followed this Darwinian survival of the fittest ethics? Because see, then, what Hitler did, what Stalin did, or any of those guys did, wasn't wrong. Think about Hitler. He was just preserving what his electromagnetic chemical impulses told him to do. They drove him, did it not? He was, you know, involved in that. It was his religion. He was creating, not creating, but maintaining the better race in his mind. Survival of the fittest. That is what comes out of this. Strongest and the fittest. But you ask Darwinian atheists about it and they say, oh no, what he did was wrong. And so even Dawkins will come out and say, you know what? Yeah, we really shouldn't follow our DNA when it comes to that. And I read that and I scratched my head and I said, well, Richard, how are we supposed to do that? In your worldview, how exactly are we supposed to do that? How can a fleshly robot not listen to its programming? How does it have any way of overcoming what its programming is? If there's a morality gene, if there's a morality molecule that is causing this to happen, then all Hitler was doing was following it. And now that's what you're saying we're doing, but then you turn right around and say, oh, we shouldn't follow that. Well, how are you supposed to do that? See, these guys aren't famous for their consistency. I will say that. But what they do then is, rather than talk about morals, they want to talk about morals, they do like they do with abortion. Instead of calling it murder, they come up with another word for it. Instead of calling it a child in the womb, they call it a fetus. I'm getting off, but you know, you know what the word you know where the word fetus comes from? It's totally off the subject. It's Latin, and you know what it means? What the Latin word mean fetus is? It means baby or small child. Aww. And so they try to call it a fetus to make it something other than a baby, and the word they're using, fetus, is Latin for baby. It's ridiculous. Anyway, they do the same thing with this thing with morals. Instead of being morals, they call it rights. Morality, these rights are then developed by what is ever the greatest good. I spend some time listening to these guys, wanting to understand what their perspective is. And they cite rights as whatever is for the greatest good of the people. But then the question is, what is good? What is good? See, good, if you use the word good, it just comes right back to defining morals again. And then what is good? What is good for society? Is it Hitler society or Mother Teresa's society? Which one is good? And the only way you can measure that and answer that question is to talk about morality again, right? So they talk about just being responsible to society, but okay, what society? Again, is it Hitler's, Mother Teresa's? Is it democracy? Is it communism? Is it socialism? What is it? And we're back to then deciding subjective morality again. So when you back them in that corner, and they come out swinging about how religion has failed. That, and they're right, okay? And this, they come out and they say, well, you know, just the same way there's all these ideas about how to organize secular society and what is good for society, and there's a variance of ideas in that, they point to religion and say, you guys can't come up with it either. That there's all these, even within Christianity, that, you know, one group will say drinking alcohol is bad. Another one says it's okay. One says, oh, okay, you're a sinner if you have a tattoo on your arm. Another one says, no, it's not. And there's all these various things that go on, right? So you guys can't decide either. Even under the one name of Jesus, you can't decide. So how do you answer that? Well, first, you don't judge a religion by its abuses. Because there's still objective morality, and that objective morality is still right, whether you believe it or not, and it's even in the church. Okay, but further than that, we need to understand that it is a categorical mistake to make that comparison. Look here. Sociology is the study of how people behave. Morality is how they ought to behave. So you can't analyze social behavior to determine morality. Whether it's in secular society and looking how that society is doing it, so that's what's moral. Or even within the religious realm and saying, well, that's how that church does it, so that's what's moral. It's a categorical mistake. They confuse how people behave with how they ought to behave. And morality is, we're talking about how they ought to behave. And so by doing that, they can continue to assert that morality is subjective and relative. But again, by that stance, let's eat our babies. Hey, it's just a matter of opinion. Same with the Holocaust, just a matter of opinion. So see, it can't be subjective or society will break down. Which I understand is sort of the whole point of this whole exercise on earth, isn't it? See, God's unshakable supreme authority sets the standard. But when mankind decided to veer away from that and eat of that tree of knowledge, then the stage was set to prove the point. And so the further we go down the path of the subjective morality, this path of eating of that tree, of gorging on that tree, the more degraded the society will become, to the point where the Bible says, unless God intervenes, all life would be destroyed on this earth. We'll destroy ourselves. And we see that illustrated plainly in this debate, in these arguments about this stuff. See, if you don't have a standard of morality as illustrated by the tree of life, then there's no way to keep anybody from doing anything, including Hitler, pedophiles, rapists, anything. Society can set the moral standard. And it can be any society we want. The society that existed right before the flood. See, that was all subjective morality. What society prevails? Stalin's? Kim Jong-un? Who decides? Morality is not determined by majority and vote. Indeed, it is not determined at all. Right in the middle of this chapter, Turek said this. It wasn't even really highlighted, but it really said it. People don't determine the right thing to do. They discover it. In other words, an objective moral value is right, even when everybody thinks it's wrong. It has to be discovered. And since objective morality is grounded in the object known as God's nature, it's unchangeable. It's authoritative. It's unaffected by our opinions about it. Turek wrote this as well. Let's get this. In order to judge between competing societies, there must be this objective standard beyond those societies and beyond humanity. Without that unchanging objective standard, all moral questions are reduced to human opinion. Nearly 7 billion human opinions. That's all you're left with. Morality is either objective or it's not. There is no third alternative. It's either objective in an unchanging God or a matter of opinion in 7 billion changing subjects. And this is really the big point, isn't it? It's either objective or subjective. It's either one or the other. It can't be anything else. Atheism and materialism has no place for objective morality because for it to be objective, it has to come from outside the material. And for it to be within the material, it has to be subjective. You get that? You understand that atheism, materialism, it has to have everything come from the material. And because objective morality has to come from outside of it, they can't be there. The only thing they have left is the subjective morality that comes from the people. 7 billion of them. And it's subjective. And as soon as it's subjective, that means that it's subject to the opinion, feelings, whims, voting, whatever, and all sorts of things of all those people. Without it being objective, then there is nothing wrong, as I've said. If there is no justice, guys, there is no injustice. Megan was not wronged. Nothing is wrong. So when an atheist say that it's immoral, it's okay. When an atheist says that something is immoral, if they say to you, hey, it's wrong for you to judge me. It's wrong for you to judge that homosexual for his lifestyle. It's immoral for you to stand against them being able to adopt babies or whatever, or not get married. They have rights. Where do you get that in your worldview? Tell me where those rights come from in your worldview. Tell me where those rights, how did they exist? Who came up with them? What moral standard are you using to say that they have a right to do that? We have the rights that are given to us by our Creator. Unalienable rights. Those are the rights that we have. And there is a big difference between those rights and whatever comes out of evolutionary electrochemical impulses and desires. See, what I believe is they don't struggle with knowing what morality is. Everyone knows what basic morality is, whether they believe in the Bible or not. Now, maybe different levels, but at the end of the day, you know, grabbing that little 7-year-old and doing unspeakable things to her is wrong. Right? The Bible says it. Romans 2. For not the hearers of the law are just in the sight of God, but the doers of the law will be justified. Now get this. When Gentiles, the people that don't know God, that's what he's referring to in this sense. When Gentiles who do not have the law, by nature, do the things in the law. These, although not having the law, are a law to themselves. They show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience bearing witness, and between themselves their thoughts accusing or else excusing them. See, in our inner being, they know there's objective morality. They argue for those rights. They'll argue eating babies is wrong, right along with the fact that they got a right for two men to habitate together in a way that is not natural. It's against the natural law, you understand? There's not an inalienable right to live against nature. So they'll put, well, yeah, you don't eat a baby, but you can kill it before it comes out. It's subjective. You don't rape a child, that's wrong. But it's okay for two men to live against nature. It's subjective. So some of those things, where do they get those things? They get these base things because they're natural, because they're objective. But the things that they cite as being moral, that even that you agree with, the point is they have no, inside their worldview, they have no way to argue it. They have no way to justify it. They can't say the Holocaust was wrong. They can't say that Megan was wronged. They can't justify those statements within their worldview. Now, they can think morally. They can act morally. I'm not saying they don't. There's atheists out there that act more moral than some Christians. The point is they can't justify that morality. They have to steal it from God. Now they try. They try to say that evolution would account for our inner drive. You know, they recognize that there is a natural law, that there's an inner drive for morality. These rights, they won't call it morality, it's rights. And so they try to deliver these rights through evolutionary process, through biological process. And they do that by pointing to society as it exists. They say, so society exists. We're married to this proposition of evolution, so we have evolved to where the society exists, and because there's rights in society, they evolved from that. That we have evolved this idea that if we cooperate with one another, we'll survive. Turk gives a few pages of this chapter to explaining why that can't work. First of all, he says that it's a categorical mistake. See, morality and biology are different categories. You can't explain immaterial morals with the material biological process. Justice isn't a molecule. There's no moral gene. Morals are prescriptive. Did you get that? Morals are prescriptive. They tell you biological processes are descriptive. So when we see in society, what we have is just descriptive of society. But morals are prescriptive. DNA will determine what a cell will do, but it won't determine what it ought to do. There's a difference. Cells have no free will. The human mind does. Moral laws are prescribed from a higher authority outside the biological process. Biological processes are descriptive and have no authority to tell your mind what to do. Second, biological process can't make survival a moral right. In the context of evolution, everything is chance, isn't it? There's no good or purpose to it. We read that. It's all random chance. So therefore, there's no rights. But evolution says that we evolve so that we can survive. Well, why? What says that survival is our right? Where did we get a right to survive? Through chance? Biology will describe what has survived, but it has no way of saying what ought to survive. Why should humans survive over, say, cockroaches? And if humans are to survive, which ones? The Jews or the Nazis? Which ones? Biology would say survival of the fittest, so the Nazis should have survived, I guess. Biology can't create rights. Can't do it. But let's even say that it can. Let's give them that. It's ridiculous, but let's go with it. Think about the societal implications of that. If survival is a biological right, then me murdering someone to take their stuff so that I'm stronger and have a better chance of survival is now morally right. If survival, biological survival, is the highest thing, then we should murder all of the weak people. We should get after it. Because that's the thing. And you see, that was Hitler's theory. That's why he murdered 6 million people. So biological processes can't make survival a moral right, and thank goodness it can't. Three, survival isn't the highest moral virtue, is it? Of course not. Think about it. Our military goes off to war, and they give themselves, and they die in battle. They're lifted up as a hero. That has a higher virtue. Giving of yourself in sacrifice for another is a much higher virtue than survival. We read that in the Bible, right? John 15, greater love is no one than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. That's exactly what Yeshua did. Even apart from Yeshua's example, society lifts up sacrifice as a higher virtue. So survival is not biologically a moral right. And certainly not the highest moral virtue. Number four, he says evolution is a process of change. Morals can't be. Think about it. If morals were changing with the evolutionary process, then there must have been a time when we didn't have a biological gene to survive. It had to have evolved, correct? So before it evolved, why didn't we just kill everybody? Why don't we kill everybody off? See, morality had to have been in place. If homosexuality was allowed before that, well, there would be no continuing of the species. Society can't evolve without standards of behavior to maintain the society while it's evolving. It had to be consistent. Just like evolution doesn't work for an eye, the parts of the eye would not exist without the other parts of the eye. It's the same for society. It's the same with morality. It can't simply evolve. It has to be there at the beginning for society to have a basis and continuance. Morals can't change or society fails. Humanity fails. We will see that as the objective standard of God's character is set aside, society will slip more and more. Number five, morality is not a social contract. They try to say this. They try to give this argument that morality is a social contract and it enables civilization. Well, to begin with, that can't evolve, as we just talked about. But even if it did, this social contract isn't grounds for objective morality. What if someone violates the contract? Is that immoral? And if that's immoral, to judge it immoral, you need to appeal to a moral law, not the contract. Circular. See, look again at the Nazis. When the war was over, what did we do? We rounded up all of those SS guys and we brought them in for war tribunals and we tried them. Okay? Now, what was their defense? Their defense was that we were in a social contract, we were in a government, and we were following the law of that government when we did these things. That's what they said. That's if you had a social contract defining morality, then what those SS men did was moral. Did the world agree with that? No. The world said, uh-uh. Yes, maybe you were following your leader, but you had a higher duty. The world said that. What's the higher duty? Where'd that high... What higher duty? It comes from objective morality, right? So social contract is not morality. So even if evolution got us a social contract, that social contract is not morality. Morality can't be voted into existence. Lastly, survival without cooperation is a pragmatic issue. It's not moral. Did evolution give us the cooperation gene? No. We don't survive through evolution because evolution has caused us to cooperate with one another. And even if it did, that's a pragmatic thing. See, it's not moral. Just because cooperation is sensible and realistic, that's pragmatic. That's pragmatism. You look at it and you say, yeah, cooperation is pragmatic. It's simple. It's realistic. We should cooperate. But just because of that doesn't mean it causes us to survive. Cooperation is pragmatic, not moral. Because you see, many people survive and even prosper because they don't cooperate. Think about it. Criminals sometimes do quite well if they don't cooperate. If you've got a thief, for example, that's very good at what he does, he prospers. He's not cooperating with society. Do you think Stalin? Do you think he cooperated with society? He killed millions and millions of people. He lived a long life. He died at 74, at peace, in his bed, still shaking his fist at God. So in his view, conquering all that he did, he prospered well. And he didn't cooperate with people, with society. It was reasonable and pragmatic for him to do what he did because he was an atheist. And his worldview said, I need to survive. The fittest need to survive. It's okay to kill all these people. Why not? I'm to get everything that I can, and that's how I'm going to do it. He used reason. He reasoned through the atheistic viewpoint and gave him the ability to not cooperate with society and to kill a bunch of people for his own benefit. See, we need to use reason as a tool to discover moral law, not to decide what it is. If there is not moral law, then Stalin and Hitler could pragmatically follow their worldview and not cooperate with others and actually survive better. So we see that evolution can't bring us morality. So atheists are caught in a dilemma. If God doesn't exist, then objective morality doesn't exist. And that includes all the rights and the morals that they support. But if God does exist, then objective morality exists and morals exist. But the problem for the atheist is that those rights that they want to promote are not supported by objective morality that God provides. For same-sex marriage, for the killing of babies in the womb, for all these other things that they invent as rights, as absolutes. Okay? I think it's ironic that the atheists, they say we're arrogant for declaring that there is an absolute authority on morality. And they say we're arrogant for declaring what those morals are when they do the exact same thing. It's arrogant of us when we declare what God's morals are, what natural law is. But it's not arrogant for them when they declare what their rights and their morals are. They want their rights and their morals legislated at the expense of the others. Which kind of brings us to this issue of legislating morality. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but theists and Christians have been accused of trying to do this, to legislate morality. But atheists and those on the left are trying to do the same thing with same-sex marriage, abortion, and the like. See, we're not supposed to legislate morality. That's what they use. You're trying to legislate morality. But it's okay when they do it. When they try to tell us that we need to legislate these things. It's hypocrisy. And the bottom line, clearly, is that we do legislate morality. We do it. We write laws to prohibit certain behaviors. That's what laws are. You prohibit behaviors that you see as immoral. Murder is immoral, so we legislate against it. Stealing is immoral. We legislate against it. So we do legislate morality. The question is not, do you or do you not legislate morality? The question is, whose morality? Hitler's? What standard are you going to use to do that? We live in a country that has been blessed beyond belief because the framers of our Constitution based our laws, based our Constitution on inalienable rights given by the Creator God. They understood objective morality. But now we have those that want to legislate based on groupthink, on fleshly desires, mostly for sex. Look at all the things that they want to legislate at this point. Same-sex marriage, sex. Divorce rate, up, sex. Those laws were changed years ago. Homosexuality, you know. Abortion. They want to have sex, they want to have it the way they want it, and they want to be free to do it. Pascal said this. He said, people almost invariably arrive at their beliefs not on the basis of proof, but on the basis of what they find attractive. inside of subjective morality, what these people are finding attractive, their fleshly desires, are not inalienable rights given by God. In fact, they are totally against even the natural laws, as the framers put it, that are self-evident. We see these truths to be self-evident. And it's why our Declaration of Independence started that way. That man was inspired. When you analyze this carefully and you begin to look at what's going on, you see that true Christians, that they're trying to adjust their behavior to fit the facts of nature and God's law. Atheists and the liberal try to adjust the facts of nature to fit their behavior. You get that? And no matter how well intended, you know, yeah, two people, you listen to some of these things, and yeah, two people should love each other. What's wrong with love? You know, there's all these different arguments that come into play. And it's all subjective. Some of them are good, some of them are bad. And so no matter how well intended, the latter, the trying to adjust the facts of nature to fit behavior, is not going to work. It leads to tragedy. Atheists and the liberal just do these things and then people suffer. When we pass political laws that ignore God's laws, people suffer. We can't change nature by passing laws. God's laws attempt, or good laws attempt to conform us to God's laws, to have our behavior conform to reality, not to try to conform reality to our desired behavior. It doesn't work. As a country, we do well when we legislate behavior based on God's law. And we will fail as a society when we legislate based on society's desired behavior. That's why this is important. That's why this subject is important. It's why the atheistic, materialistic view is so dangerous. It's because of this. It's why you've got to be able to defend against it. Because without objective morality that comes from God as our Creator, there are really no rights at all. Human rights would amount to no more than subjective preferences. So while they can believe in and fight for abortion, same-sex marriage, and other rights, they have no basis on which to ground those rights or justify them. Church put it this way. Last slide. In fact, to be a consistent atheist, and this is going to sound outrageous, but it's true, you can't believe that anyone has ever actually changed the world for the better. Objectively, good political or moral reform is impossible in an atheistic world, which means you have to believe that everything that Wilberforce, Lincoln, and Martin Luther King did to abolish slavery and racism wasn't really good. It was just different. It means you have to believe that rescuing Jews from the ovens was not objectively better than murdering them. It means you have to believe that gay marriage is no better than gay bashing. Since we're all dancing to our DNA, the gay basher was just born with the anti-gay gene. Can't blame him. It means you have to believe that protecting Megan is no better than handing her over to her rapist. You may be thinking, that's outrageous. Racism, murder, assault, and rape are objectively wrong, and people do have a right not to be harmed. And I agree. But it's true only if God exists. In an atheistic universe, there is nothing objectively wrong with anything at any time. There are no limits. Anything goes. Which means to be a consistent atheist, you have to believe in the outrageous. In other words, you can't be an atheist and argue that anything is right or wrong, that anyone has any rights, including life, without stealing that morality from God. I have one more thought, and then I want to circle up and talk about this, because there's more stuff than what I can give here. Listen, guys, listen to me. We have morals where other species do not, because we have a higher calling. We are made in the image of God. Now, I want you to think about that. His laws are a reflection of himself. See, his moral law is him revealing himself to us. It's reflecting his character. And that is his character. And then we are made in that image. You see, that's why that morality is in us. That's why they understand that it's objectively wrong to murder. Because they were made, we're all made in the image of God. White, black, brown, atheist, agnostic, Christian, Jew, Muslim, whatever. We're all made in the image of God. And his law is what he revealed as being who he is. And we are to reflect that. That's why I've said in these messages for years, if you do away with the law of God, you're doing away with God. That morality is within us because we are made in His image. And that, guys, is why there is right and wrong. That is why there is a tree of life that stands in difference to the tree of knowledge of good and evil. That's why that is subjective morality and there is objective morality. And when they turned from God and went on, that's what they turned from. They turned from His character. They turned from who He was. They said, no, I don't want to, I was made in your image. I don't want to be in your image. I want to be in my image. I want to go create myself. There is so much for you to sit for years and think about the implications of what happened in that garden. You can't think on it enough. It seems that everything I do and everything I think about and all of my journey, it always comes back there in some way. See, the right, that morality, it agrees with God. It agrees with how we are made and what we are made from. We're made in the image of God. And the wrong is in opposition to that. And because we are in the image of God, it's why human life has value over other life. It's why God put everything else under our subjection. And that value is intrinsic in everybody. Why? Because you are connected to the Creator God who has that character. That moral basis. He is the object. His character is that object. And because of that, your value, the value that's infused into you by that source that stands above all other sources, is God Himself and you being in Him in image. So think about that for a minute. The infinite God has endowed you with immeasurable worth. We look at these majestic heavens. Look how wonderful they are. They're not made in God's image. You are. You are. And that is why you have moral rights. Because that morality is connected to the nature and the presence of God. They say that there was no more intelligent meeting of men than when Thomas Jefferson sat and ate by himself. He wrote this: "All men are created equal and endued by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They come from God. And because of that, you are inherently valuable and always will be. No matter what you've done, no matter what anybody else thinks about you, you are literally sacred because you have this connection to God." We don't want to break that connection. And that objective morality is that connection, because it comes from the source of the one that made you. That object is the nature and character of Yehovah. When you reject morality, when you go against those morals ingrained in you, you're rejecting your Creator. When you reject the law, you reject your Creator. When Adam and Eve rejected the tree of life for the knowledge of the tree of good and evil in order to establish their own morality, they rejected their Creator. And to reestablish that, we must go back to it. We are to embrace the law, to embrace it as our source of morality, and embrace Him. Not to earn salvation, but to restore this relationship. I have some more to say about that later. But in that, we find life. All right. So, subjective morality, it's the tree of life, or the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Objective morality, it's the tree of life. And that's where we need to get back to. Eternal life is in Yeshua our Lord, who leads us back, who provides the grace and the mercy to lead us back to embrace our Creator. And there we find life. We find it in the tree of life. And be able to then, still able to reside in His perfect presence. So we don't want to be persuaded by arguments of subjective morality. We don't want to be swayed by the arguments of this society. Right? Amen? Amen. Let's talk about it.